Representative Hamilton, I think we'll just let you go ahead and start, you know, explaining your bill. I won't move it at this point in time until we have a quorum.
Okay. But
please go ahead and explain it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Excuse me. Committee will come to order.
Once again, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'll keep my comments brief. I do have a member here to testify, a friend from back home. Basically, the bill number is House File 1884, and it's a bill that seeks authority for the Windham School District, District number 177, to transfer up to $270,000 from its reserves operating capital account to its undesignated general fund. And like I said, I do have the superintendent from the Windham School Districts, Mr. Doug Froak, here. So I'd like for him to testify, if you would, please.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Doug Froak. I'm the superintendent of Windham Area Schools, Independent School District number 177. As Representative Hamilton indicated to you, we appear before you today in request of a fund balance transfer brought on by the sale of a district office building that the district owned and utilized for approximately 5 years. For all practical purposes, the building was utilized for district office, district business office personnel, that being myself, the business manager, payroll, transportation. Then there was also some square footage that was rented out to the service cooperative for their special education, low incidence, and administrative personnel, as well as the telecommunications portion of the service cooperative, which served the telecommunications backbone for about 40 districts in our area. So that was the district purchased the building back in 1998. For about $317,000. They entered into an agreement with the service cooperative to serve as a rentor for the purpose of, again, offsetting some utility costs and those kinds of things. As things went, the building was purchased with cash straight out of operating capital back in 1998. Within a year, the operating capital fund was in deficit, and as a result, the district transferred a year later roughly $236,000 from its undesignated reserve to zero out that negative fund balance in operating capital. So herein lies then the herein lies the rationale then for what we're looking for in request of the fund balance transfer. Obviously the building did not meet well with the public and so on and so forth, figuring that there were costs that were not being able to go to children and the education service delivery model of its children, and as a result then it had been a political issue, if you will, for the district, and we opted to sell the building this past fall, partnering with the Bank Midwest out of Windham, so that they could come in and utilize the technology portion. The building was sold for $270,000, and the department notified us as of the closing date of December 1 that the money or the proceeds from the sale of the building had to go into our operating capital. As you may or may not know, the Windham District some permission, some legislative approval to use that money more flexibly for us as we continue to provide excellence in the area of educational service delivery. So that's our request in a nutshell. It's rather cumbersome. The whole purchase of the building is rather cumbersome, rather confusing. It's a building that we'd like to put behind us, and maybe the final piece of the chapter is being able to put the money back where it came from, and so we can put the final closed chapter into that book. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
All right. Before we go any further, we do have a quorum now, and I will move House File 1884 before the committee and to be laid over for possible consideration in the omnibus bill. And Representative Hamilton, did you have any other comments? Otherwise, we'll go to questions.
Questions would be fine, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Superintendent, was this fund transfer part of your plan to get out of SOD, or is this fund, I mean, was this part of what you figured in to help get you out of SOD?
Actually, it was not. That this the sale of the building, although it had been discussed during the time that it was in operating debt, the difficulty was actually finding a buyer. And so at
Proke, is it? I'm sorry.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. I'm somewhat concerned about plugging operational expenditure with one-time dollars, and you know, my question is going to be is how does this fit into the grand scheme? I think you kind of answered that question. Do you have anything you want to add to that? I'm looking at one-time dollars, and you're saying that you need this to keep from going in SOD again, and yet, how about next year?
Exactly.
Next biennium?
That you've hit the nail on the head. It is one-time money. I can't argue that point at all. It is one-time money. What it does is it structurally addresses us, structurally balances us for what could be money that we may need this year to balance in fiscal 05 We realize that those dollars are one-time dollars with no tails attached to them that we would have to replace in fiscal 05. Hence the indication of our board meeting this evening and the rather large reductions that we're making tonight or starting tonight.
Can I follow, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Jenner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the other side of the equation, where you're taking the money from is the capital account.
Correct.
How are your buildings? Do you have capital needs? Do you have repairs, roofs, sidewalks, tuck pointing? Are you going to have capital needs where this money is going to be needed next year or in the future? Are you shortchanging another, are you creating another problem, is what I'm saying, on the other end?
We've tried to address that issue, having left roughly about $50,000 to set aside in our reserved operating capital fund for this year. And the reason we're able to do that is that we have a 5 through 12 middle high school that was built in 2001, so the needs aren't as great. A lot of our energies are being channeled toward the elementary, which is a 1955 building, K through 4. And so we risk as well. But I guess my request is that we be able to return the money to where it came from. And we made that operating transfer from undesignated reserve to zero out a negative balance that existed in operating capital in 2000. And that's our request.
I guess, Superintendent, you know, we'd like to think that you have a plan for staying out of statutory operating debt. If we were to allow you to do this, will you be able to keep your head above water in the next few years? And you know, recognizing you may have maintenance needs as well.
The issue, of course, is a difficult question to answer in terms of, obviously, we struggle with the level funding of the frozen funding over the last 2 years. Obviously, I'm surprised we're in as good a shape as we are, having gone through that and lost kids, those kinds of things. Our intent, our discussions are working on another operating levy attempt next fall. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, Minnesota was a key point state for the national election. We think that played a role in why we were not successful last November. But and again, the reductions that we have on the table at this point are our solutions to addressing our structural balance.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. You know, we're dealing with individuals that are extremely competent. Superintendent Froak did come in and had some tough challenges and decisions that they had to make. The leadership down there does have a plan on how to address this. Of course, they're waiting for what we do here as a state to be able to allocate additional dollars to make sure when we're doing our budgets and everything down in the Windham School District. So, again, they do have a plan, very competent individuals working on this. And so, once again, I'd ask for the support here.
I think if there's no more questions, we will lay this over for consideration in the omnibus bill. And thank you very much. And Representative Hamilton, you may stay there. Thank you, Mr. Froak, for coming up.
Thank you.
And we'll move on to Representative Hamilton's other bill, House File 678.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Once again, I'll keep my comments brief. We do have individuals from the Worthington School District up here to testify. Four total, I believe. Is that correct? Four total. So once again, this is House File 678, and this is a bill that seeks to authorize the Worthington School District number 518 to lease the facilities for its residential program to a private business organization to provide residential programs and services. So at this time, Madam Chair, I'd like to call the testifiers.
And Representative Hamilton, I will move House File 678 and suggest that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And we will welcome you, sir. Would you introduce yourself, please, for the record? I've lost.
Sure. I'm John Landgard, Superintendent of District 518, and with me I have Mr. Dave Skog, who is our Director of Management Services, Pat Morphew, who is the District Accountant, and Jeff Jorgensen, who is the Director of Special Programs. I do have some additional copies of our program here, or
Okay.
That may help you in answering some questions, and we'll skip through because I know you're on a tight time frame. I do appreciate your time to hear this bill and spend some time with us and listen to it, and thank you up front. The nice thing here is we're not asking for any financial dollars. We're asking or working with this legislation to create a win-win situation in our district and for our students as well. District 518 has been educating disabled children in this type of fashion for over 50-plus years, previously as a crippled children's school. The last approximate 10 years, or when the group home model, which we're here talking about, was started. The original intent was to develop a dormitory-style setting, but when the involvement of the Department of Human Services came to the forefront, that's when the group home model started. Back in 1995 and 96, there was $1.7 million in grant dollars given to the district to build these group home facilities, in which we provide group home services, much as many nonprofit or for-profit organizations do, and then as well the educational component. This is a unique program to the state. We are probably the only school district in the state that offers such programming, and probably the only school district in the United States that does the very same thing.
Mr. Superintendent Landgaard, where do your students come from?
We have here, and that's Mr. Jorgensen was going to address it. He has a map. It's listed, though, on about the 6th page. Okay. We have students from Pipestone County, Lyons County, Rock County, Murray County, Stearns County, out of state, here on South Dakota, Sioux Falls, Fargo, and Grand Forks. And they come from all over. Part of the issue that we have right now is, and with our numbers you'll see a little discrepancy, but there's some things in here that have some discrepancy on this handout. 6 out of 14 kids are above the age. They're more for the adult services component. We did talk to DHS to get a waiver on that. Part of the problem that exists for us is we not only function under the Department of Education, but we also function under the Department of Human Services guidelines and rules, and hence create some of the problems. The other problem that exists with this programming is many of the people who originally were part of putting this together no longer exist at the Department of Human Services, the Department of Ed, the Department of Finance, so we have some unique characteristics that exist there.
So you need to re-educate everyone every time an administration changes?
Anytime we ask questions, we're having to re-educate everybody, and that's why we're asking for this proposed legislation. Like I said, we're trying to create a win-win situation in which we're not here asking for money. We're here asking for legislation that allows us to lease the facility out and solve our own problems. With that, though, maybe I can allow Mr. Jorgensen to address the program itself.
Mr. Jorgensen.
Madam Chairman, as Mr. Landgaard had just pointed out, this is a unique program within the state of Minnesota. My background is inclusive of both the educational field and also working the residential programs in different areas of the state of Minnesota and also in South Dakota as well. So I thought I came in with a pretty good understanding of what this program was about and thought it might have been a good idea up front when I took the job 3 years ago. What we do see is that the residential program that the school district is offering services to students that are predominantly identified as MMR, or mild to moderate to severe mental retardation. It has to be a primary diagnosis. Initially, it was set up to service only students that were of school age or individuals that were of school age, and we had up to 20 beds available. Currently, only 14 of those beds are filled on a full-time basis, and one of those beds is filled only on a temporary basis through a respite-type shelter. 5 out of the 15 are employed then within the community. 33% of our total population is Hennepin County students that have come down from the city's area.
And did you say 33%?
33% of all the students that we service there within the residential program. One of the issues that we run into in the residential programming is that our costs are generally higher. Students that are coming to us generally, that are individuals that are coming to us that are of school age, generally come in with several comorbid disorders, about as I've listed off on the handout. We get the most severe cases in. Generally includes comorbid disorders of autism. We have vision impairment, respiratory distress, cerebral palsy, hearing loss, hypersensitivity, ADHD, depression, oppositional defiant disorder, intermittent explosive, seizure disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, impulse control disorder, hydrocephaly, Tourette's, bipolar, and sensory integration disorder. This is out of the 14 students that I listed off as full-time students have these types of comorbid disorders available to them. Now, we service these types of disorders within District 518 within our daily programming all the time. Students we service, anyone who's of school age, and we find ways of servicing them. What we find difficult in the situation that we're in District 518 is that we're servicing two main organizations or oversights. One is in the area of special education, and the other is in the residential program itself. While initially the Crippled Children's School was put under the Department of Education, with the breaking out into the residential homes, we literally took on two sets of bosses. One, the Minnesota Department of Education, and the second, the Department of Human Services. And while this seems like a marriage made in heaven, it is in no way a matter of being an ideal situation. The Minnesota Department of Education has its own set of rules, which is defined in the Total Special Education System Manual that they put together after statutes and rules have been defined by state, which leads into program standards, individual service plans, and then there's the whole issue of program finance. DHS has twin sisters of each and every one of these, but their program requirements are completely different from what special education is set out to do. Although the language is very similar, service requirements, licensures of individuals, and especially training requirements in non-licensed staff are much higher on the DHS side than they are on the special education side. Program finance specifically, school districts track back to the parents, the parents' place of residence, whereas DHS reimburses us for the residential side based on the students' residence at the time of their initial placement. And so we're working with two different entities to receive reimbursement for each of the students that are within our program. As you can see, that we've got two spectrums that we're working with, two very different entities, and all the language is very similar. It's very difficult to juggle these two sides. As a school administrator myself, I find DHS dizzying and all the requirements there. We have had a lot of difficulty in trying to work with them, and we've had to go outside to find outside service providers to come in to help us manage that portion of the residential program.
So is the main problem you're trying to solve the fact that you have to work with both agencies? And you want to get rid of Human Services Agency.
I don't think we're going to get rid of Human Services Agencies. What we're trying to point out is that this is a difficult scenario for any school district to be in to service both education and the Department of Human Services requirements.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, I guess my... If this building is leased out, who gets the money? Is the assumption that the Worthington School District would get those funds, or is the assumption because the facility was built on off of state grants that the state would receive the funds from the lease? I guess I just want to know what your basic assumption is on this issue.
Mr. Landard.
With this, the plan or the legislation would allow the district to collect any lease regard the facilities, primarily due to the fact that we've identified unemployment costs related to another organization taking over this of over $200,000. That's why I say we're not here asking for money. If we shut the program totally down at the end of this year, we're going to be short that money. I'm trying to find a resolution to this that I'm not coming back and asking you folks for money. That's the reason for us receiving the lease dollars.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hamilton, I'm looking at the fiscal note from the Department of Finance, and seems like the Department of Finance believes that they would get the money, right, because this facility was built off of, all state dollars, and it was, the facility was built off of a grant from the state of Minnesota. Have you had any contact with the Department of Finance? Can you enlighten us as to where they might be coming on this, because if the issue is about collecting the money, I'm not sure that the bill, the assumptions, need to be clarified before we move forward, because as I read the fiscal note, there seems to be a dispute about who would get the lease payments.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Representative, those are conversations that are being had and need to continue to be had, because obviously we're taking a look at where those dollars will go. I too have seen that, and so we're in the process of identifying exactly what you stated. So,
okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, are you trying to have? Excuse me, Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair.
Did you have another question? Superintendent Langard.
To maybe go one step further and clarify that, that's part of the uniqueness of this program with the changeover of everybody in the various departments. Nobody can answer those questions clearly and definable for us. I have asked for a meeting with all the stakeholders. Mr. McElroy has been working to schedule a meeting, and I think that may be coming up next week. I know they're looking at the 13th, which I would hope, Madam Chair, you'd be available to participate in that as well as the other departments or whoever you see fit to participate in that. We need to clarify some of those things, and as I read through the agreement, I don't think that's clearly defined, but that's my interpretation and something that needs to be defined with all the stakeholders.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Superintendent. And the legislation in front of us doesn't do anything to add to the clarity. And if it is the intent of the Worthington School Districts and the author of the bill that the Worthington School District gets the dollars, then you just put it into legislation. So it's probably the easiest way to clear it up, but I'll leave that for you.
And were you Superintendent, are you trying to get out of the business of both the school-age kids and the older people? I mean, were you planning to just stop doing this kind of services altogether?
Madam Chair, we're in the process of we want to service the kids. We feel they're being very successful in our school district. We would like to have them as part of our educational component. We just want somebody else to take over the operation of this program and the costs that are centered around it.
Rather than the school district?
Yes, approximately 2000-2001, and there's a sheet in the handout here that has this. The district was about $200,000+ in the hole. These dollars come directly out of our general fund. So anytime we're deficit spending, those dollars are part of that. Right now, we're in the black, but the direction that we see this program heading in the future does not show that. And eventually it's going to turn around, particularly is with the number of students. I mentioned the 6 out of 14. That number goes a little higher next year, and some of those students will actually probably be moving out of our programming, so we'll have empty beds. And once we lose clients and have empty beds, it makes it much more difficult to operate the facility.
What I'm trying to understand, Superintendent, is what has leasing the facility got to do with why aren't you just finding somebody else to operate this whole thing, this whole program? What does leasing the facility really have to do with it?
With us being able to have the lease ability, it allows us to cover our unemployment costs for the employees we currently have. I mentioned earlier we have identified at least over $200,000 in possible unemployment costs. This saves me the fact that since it was a pilot program 10 years ago, coming back and saying we need some help, because that comes right out of our general fund. And about 10 days ago, we made $500,000 in reductions, and we're projected next year to make somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000 to $750,000 in reductions out of our general fund. And that is with the fact that we're seeing additional money as a possibility in the governor's proposal and some of the discussion you had on the floor today.
All right. Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Gavney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent, I apologize. I came in after some of the initial presentation, so I'm needing to test some of my assumptions. Sounds like the proposal is to lease the facility to some other organization that would continue to run it and provide same or similar programming. Am I correct about that?
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Superintendent. I assume you already have another organization in mind, or that there's been discussions that this isn't just we're not having a theoretical conversation here today.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Langford.
We have talked to at least two organizations that are interested in leasing the facilities for operation of this program. Of course, there are no guarantees that once they get looking at it, they may change. Our current management firm that we have that oversights the DHS part of it for us has told us currently that they intend to eliminate their services at the end of June. That creates some more energy for us that makes us a little nervous.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
I think my concern goes in part to the issue of the unemployment compensation that you've referenced a couple of times, and to back out of that concern for the resident population. And I'm assuming that if the programming continues, that there would be no unexpected turnover in the resident population, that the folks who live there would continue to live there, and the staffing would be provided under the auspices of a different organization. I also assume that those residents would benefit from continuing the relationships they already have with that staff, and that often with the sort of populations you've talked about, actually those relationships are critical. Have you, in the discussions you've had with these, it sounds like at least two other organizations, talk to them about taking on the district staff who are currently working there? And I'm hoping then circumnavigating the whole unemployment insurance issue.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Langard.
We have had some discussion. We haven't had that in-depth of discussion because depending on what happens with this legislation would have some effect on where we head with things. Part of the issue that happens for us is since we are a union-based group and the other organizations are not, many of the employees may choose not to go with that group that decides to lease this. We don't have exact figures, but we know their salaries are much less than what we're paying. The other part that exists is some of the existing clients we have may not continue with us. An example, Hennepin County may decide to pull a couple out. We hope they don't. We would like to maintain them in our school system, but there's no guarantees there either. But they do have the opportunity to just then utilize those homes for adults who need that service, so then they would be full. And I know there's interest. We haven't had any in-depth discussion with other organizations, so just brief. Are you interested? What's your interest level? What would be an appropriate lease rate? That type of thing.
Thank you.
So what you're expecting is that you can lease the buildings that you now have out to this other operator, and somehow that other operator will be able to pay the costs and pay to lease the building and be able to run it in the black?
Yes.
Whereas you could not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And why would that be?
They seem to have the skills related to functioning under the DHS, lower employee rates. They get the reimbursement. We charge at a rate, if they can maintain, we charge at a higher rate than many of these other organizations due to our costs related to the educational component, our salaries, and other things where they don't have some of those costs. The other part is they can easily maintain a full home compared to us, where we struggle in maintaining that due to our rates we charge. So it allows them a much easier way to keep their beds full compared to the school district. We're usually trying to get school-age kids first, and that's the difficult part.
Okay. Members, Representative Grilling, last question. We're moving on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent, are any of the children that are placed at the facility placed there by the courts?
No, they're not.
Thank you.
All right. We will lay this over. I feel like we need to explore finance, human services, etc., before we would take any action on this. So, Representative Hamilton, if this needs to be moved to another committee, we will let you know that, and we'll bring this bill up again and move it to wherever it needs to be.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming up and making this a little more clear than when we started. Representative Knobloch. House file 2003. I will move House file 2003 before the committee, and with the recommendation that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Knobloch, would you like to explain your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, members. House File 2003 is a simple bill. It would allow the St. Cloud School District 742 to transfer $800,000 from its debt redemption fund to the reserved operating capital account in the general fund without making a levy reduction. Members, this comes to me from the school board of District 742, who have passed a resolution in support of this bill. District 742 has experienced some significant declines in enrollment in the last 10 years, and particularly the last few years. Back in the early 1990s, when we had significant growth, there were actually three new elementary schools built in District 742, and I want to tell you they were very frugal in building these schools. If you would come to my school district, they actually all look identical. It's really kind of amazing. I mean, they are in three different parts of town. They've got identical brick. They've got identical design. They all look identical, and they did that as a way to save on the architectural fees. They built three copycat schools. Since then, we've had some significant declines in enrollment. In fact, I would guess over the last 10 years we're pushing a decline of 2,000 students. I know that from 2003 to 2004, we had a decline of 700 students just in that one single year alone. And we have consequently closed three other schools in the last few years as we have had demographic shifts in our area. This bill would basically allow our new superintendent, Mr. Bruce Watkins, who I'll introduce here, to help stabilize the district's decline in enrollment and the financial difficulties that has caused. And members, I'd introduce Superintendent Watkins to talk more about the bill.
Superintendent Watkins.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm here with our business manager, Kevin Janiszewski, and may on occasion, if there are questions, defer to him. Thank you for hearing our bill. We are a district that currently maintains 17 buildings and have a bonded indebtedness on the three that were previously mentioned. We apply the levy limitations to those, but we have accumulated a balance in the debt redemption fund, and we seek authorization to transfer $800,000 out of that fund into our operating capital reserve. We intend over a period of 3 years to use approximately $266,000 per year on a series of one-time expenditures. We are looking for a land acquisition in one of our geographic areas where we have a growing population. We are looking to continue to provide the best in technology for our students. We have several large building improvement projects planned. We have some new textbook adoptions. I am mentioning one-time purchases because we realize that this is not an ongoing funding source. So we look for your approval and authorization to make that transfer.
Representative Grattan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Knobloch, we just had a discussion on the floor about funding for education, and I noticed you were taking a leading role saying the governor's funding was enough for education. We didn't need to do any more. And I noticed that Representative Opatz and Representative Hosh voted with you, but now here you are, the three of you, with a bill for not lowering the tax rate of your local property taxpayers, but instead asking for a special bill for your district for more funding into the general fund. So I don't really have a question, but I just find that to be curious. Like, I don't know if you care to comment on it or not, but it's not a question, it's a statement.
Are there any other questions?
Well, excuse me, I would care to comment on that, Representative Growling, I have not and did not say on the floor today that I thought the governor's proposal was enough. I think I specifically stated that we're going to be putting more money into the House budget proposal for education than the governor recommended, and the resolution that it carried today spent an additional $75 million more than the governor recommended. So I don't want the record to in any way just hold your statement unchallenged about what went on the floor today. I don't know, as I did say on the floor, I don't know what the House budget is going to look like. I don't know what this committee, all of you, are going to decide to do in terms of a recommendation on how much money will be one-time money, how much money will go on to the formula. Will there be Q-comp? Won't there be Q-comp? Will we do something with property taxes, and what will it be? I don't know yet what that's going to be, and I don't really even know yet what we're going to be proposing for a target for this committee, except to say that it's going to be more than what the governor has proposed. I bring this still forward because I want this bill to be in the mix, and I think that this is something that our school board has requested that I bring forward, and as we talk about what the omnibus education bill should look like, I think this is an item that needs to be up for discussion as well, and without my introducing it here, we wouldn't have that ability to have it discussed.
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, also a comment. Representative Greiley and I, too, I didn't say much in the House floor because I was kind of disappointed when I saw the Senate come up with their proposal for education. I saw nothing, absolutely nothing. I was very disappointed with the Senate and their lead when we come up with 2.5% and 3%. At least we're going in the right direction. But I do have a question for the superintendent. Right now, you've lost 700 kids, or you lost, in fact, more than that. And yet at the same time, you're looking at land acquisition. You're looking at, I need the explanation on that end of it.
Yeah, we have two growing communities in our district. Other than that, we have declining enrollment. In fact, even the two growing communities that we have may really be a relocation phenomena that we have as they move towards suburbia, but we do not have adequate buildings in those two locations. So ultimately, we're looking at that. We have 255 square miles in our district, and we don't have facilities in all geographic regions. But I mention it because there are a number of one-time expenses that we could benefit from.
Representative Clemzy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, I was wondering where the excess and the debt redemption fund came from. How did you end up with an excess there?
I'm going to have our business manager handle that.
That's Mr. Januszewski.
Very good. Januszewski. Thank you, Madam Chair. What happens is the state requires on the repayment or the levying of the principal and interest on the existing bonds at 105% of the levy. And the 5% is essentially for any delinquencies that property taxes don't get collected. Well, actually, the delinquency rate is less than the 5%, so what happens is the amount builds up in the fund balance, and then that's what we're asking for as a transfer.
Madam Chair, Representative Clinzing.
I think this is for Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow. Normally, if those debt redemption funds get, is there any statutory language that directs where that money should go? Should there be an excess in the debt redemption fund?
Madam Chair, Representative.
Mr. Strom.
Yes, there is. The calculation that's made relies on essentially a second prior year's fund balance, so to determine whether there's an excess or not. But if there is an excess, according to the formula that's in Chapter 475, then the district's debt levy the following year is reduced by the amount of that excess. So I believe in the case of St. Cloud, if no transfer were made this year, then next fall for the Payroll 6 levies, they would have an excess that would be certified, and their overall debt levy would be lower next fall.
Madam Chair?
Superintendent.
I simply wanted to let the committee know that along with needing your authorization to do this, that we have recently formed a finance committee that serves advisory to the Board of Ed, a facilities committee that serves advisory to the Board of Ed, and also consulted our auditor on our balance in this area. And simply wanted you to know that we were seriously looking at how to handle the situation and wanted you to know that we're seeking outside consultant too. But we realize this is the body that has the authority to grant the permission.
Representative Groning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question for Representative Knobloch, but since Representative Heidgerken threw me in with the Senate, I have to say, I think what the Senate did could be either very stupid or very brilliant, but they didn't consult me on it. But as they said, they're trying to balance the budget, and then they'll get around to funding education, so it's clearer where the money's coming from. But I don't usually get into the bailiwick of defending the Senate. And so I'd prefer to have you direct your comments at whatever I say or do, not lump me in with the Senate, please. Would you like to be lumped in with them?
Well, Madam Chair, let me just say that I think it's a wise move of Representative Grylands to not try to defend the Senate.
Madam Chair, I'm saying I'm not defending or not. It could be either very stupid or very brilliant, and time will tell. But my question, however, is for Representative Knobloch. So, Representative Knobloch, you're saying that the governor's budget for education wasn't sufficient, and if that had been the case, then you definitely needed this ball in the air. If the House resolution that we passed today should maintain, then do you still need this bill, or would that cover it, and you're just passing this or trying to pass this bill in case that resolution doesn't hold?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, again, I don't know what all of you are going to recommend in your education bill. I don't know how the money that is in whatever the target may be that you get, I don't know how that money will be distributed, if it will favor this district more than it's been favored in the past, if it will favor it less than it's been favored in the past. I don't know. And my school board has requested me to bring this forward, and I want to do that as a bill that can be in the mix for possible discussion pending what else the committee decides to do.
All right. Are there any further questions? Members, you do realize that that if we were to transfer, allow them to do this with the $800,000, that is a levy cost that we carry in our bill. You do understand that. Okay. Are there, you said that you have a couple of the schools you had built are now closed
Madam Chair, no, the this relates to three new schools, or while they're still relatively new, they were built in the early 1990s. They have since closed three much older schools that were built, 1920s, 30s, something like that, and I think they've sold off two of the three now. Those are totally different schools than those covered by this.
All right. All right, well, seeing no other questions, we will lay this over for possible inclusion. House File 2003 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you,
Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, gentlemen. Representative Finstead. And Representative Finstead, I know that your superintendent couldn't make it this morning or this afternoon, as it turns out. However, I will move House File 1878, and I believe that, you know, between you and Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom, we can probably deal with this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will, first of all, I have to apologize for my superintendent. She had to fill in the media center this morning, or today, so she's unable to be here. But she did come here last year and testify on this same proposal. So I'll quickly give you what I know on it, and I have a little letter from her that I can outline a couple quick points, and then we'll see if there's questions. But what this bill does, it allows the Butterfield School District number 836 to transfer up to $50,000 from its reserve capital account to the undesignated general fund balance, and then also $60,000 from its bus purchase account, and same to be transferred to the undesignated general fund balance. And then also the last portion of the bill says that the total amount transferred for a three-year period must not include a total more than $50,000 from the reserved operating capital account, or $60,000 from the bus purchase account. The Butterfield School District is in deficit spending, and they just came out of statutory operating debt in fiscal year 04. The superintendent told me, I talked to her on the phone a little bit today, but she said that their intent was to use this money only if they have some unforeseen or unexpected district costs during the next school year. They have a plan in place with adjustments and some program, I guess, adjustments and cuts, and that their plan, if everything goes as planned, they will be fine, but they want this bill passed in case there are some unexpected costs during the school year. And they do have the district does have a plan in place for the new program shifts and cuts for the 06 year, that they would be able to generate positive dollars. That's my spiel.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this the exact bill we heard last year and included in our omnibus bill, Madam Chair?
I believe it was. Was it in the omnibus bill? Do you remember?
Yes, this was in the omnibus bill. Okay. But this is the exact gentleman, Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom?
The dates were changed by a year, but other than that.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Representative Finstead, does Butterfield own its own bus fleet?
Madam Chair.
Representative Finstead.
Yes, it is my understanding that they do, and that they have, I'm trying to remember if it was one or two, they call them floating buses or extra buses, so they have this reserve account for new buses, and they feel that this is, at the time, there's
no need.
Plan in place, no need.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Finstead, is this all the money they have in their bus purchase account?
Madam Chair, you stumped me. I don't think so, but I maybe someone here will be able to answer it for me.
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, if you look at the fiscal note, it indicates that as of June 30th, 2004, Butterfield had a $75,000 balance in its bus purchase account.
All right. Representative Clancy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fisted, you may not be able to answer this either, but we'll give it a try anyway. Is it part of their plan then to replace the $60,000 in a couple of years for coming buses do break down and new ones need to be bought, and that's probably why that counts there. So is it part of their plan to replace that money?
Madam Chair, Representative, what I can answer, I can't specifically answer that, but I think it is their overall plan not to have to use this account. In the letter and in talking to the superintendent today, what she has said is that if their plan is in place, they won't have to access these dollars, but they want the ability to do it for if there's unexpected district costs throughout the next budget year. So I don't that doesn't necessarily answer your question, but I guess the hopes would be that they wouldn't have to use this money.
And was this the same hope they had last year?
Yes.
Okay. Seeing no more questions, House File 2003, excuse me, I'm on the wrong House File, 1878, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative. If we have further questions, we'll call you, and you can get the answers from your superintendent. Thank you so much. And Representative Severson, I think we'll try to quickly do your bill, and then we have to get out of here and let the policy committee take over. Most of us don't get out of here. Just a few more will come in. Yes. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I will move House File 1932 before the committee to be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in the previous, last year's finance bill, Sartell had included $112,000 and what was adopted put into the bill, I think, at the tune of $107,000. This current bill requests a two-year extension on that levy for $107,000 for the first year and $67,000 for the second additional year. That is because of rising costs of steel and unforeseen construction costs that they had encountered in the process. They have currently 3 years approved at $107,000 per year, and this would take it to the fourth and fifth to complete the project itself. The garage is currently under construction. They previously had a garage that was taken over by the city for the city maintenance facility, and they had moved the bus garage out to a new elementary school that they have placed on the outskirts of town. And I would be open for any questions that you might have, and I'll try and do the best I can to answer those questions.
All right, if this was done for two more years, would that take care of it?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
All right, are there questions from members of the committee? I believe we saw this bill last year also. Anybody? Hearing none, we will lay this bill over also. Thank you, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, before you adjourn this meeting, I'll just make an announcement to the audience who are here and members of the Finance or the Policy Committee that we will give at least 15 minutes for the staff to clean up Finance and put out policy. So we'd look at convening the policy meeting at 4:50.
All right, and the only item of business that we have left as a finance committee today is to take a look at the minutes. Representative Erickson?
Madam Chair, I'll move approval of the minutes. I did read them when I first got here.
Good for you, Representative. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes as stated, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved, and our meeting is adjourned. I'll see you tomorrow at 12:30.